Hey guys, no Adam, no Riley this week. Instead, we are joined by Nick Lee of EmeraldCitySwagger.com, who writes about the Mariners over there on our sister site. This week on the Soto Mojo podcast, we talk about the WBC, spring training, and we get into a detailed breakdown of the Mariners' infield. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. That's right, guys. No Adam today or no Riley today, but welcome to the Soto Mojo podcast. This is your interim host, Colby Patnode, and joining me this week is Nick Lee. Nick, say hello to the people.
Oh, it's great to be here. It's an honor. It's always fun to find an excuse to talk more baseball.
Ain't that the truth? So we'll start off this week like we start off every week with our stat of the week. I'm going to call a little audible on Adam here, and I'm going to mention that I believe it was Wednesday night. The Dominican Republic played the United States in the World Baseball Classic. Felix Hernandez versus Drew Smyly. I hope Mariners fans got a chance to watch that. If you didn't, you can find it on YouTube. So take a look. But in the fourth inning of that game, Felix Hernandez hit 93.6 miles per hour with his fastball. That was the highest recorded pitch velocity-wise for Felix Hernandez since early in the 2015 season. So that's something to keep an eye on. Nick, do you think there's anything to read into that, or do you just think that's adrenaline and just one pitch?
Oh, I think that's a huge thing. Last year, it was one of the talks of the talk of this from Felix, and him hit nearly 94 in March. They should, maybe we can attain some of that to the adrenaline of pitching for his country. But I think, at least for him, not every pitcher, but for him, that velocity is a big.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. So that just segues pretty nicely here into the actual World Baseball Classic. So how much have you been watching? What have you noticed? What's your interest level?
I love it. I've watched every USA game. I have actually watched a good majority of the Latin American countries on ESPN Deportes. I like listening to baseball in Spanish. I'm fluent in it, so it's fun to watch and listen to.
Awesome.
So yeah, I've been watching a lot of Latin American countries, and it's been a blast. I don't remember it being as fun as it has been this year. I don't know if it's just because of the games or what, but this year has been a blast.
Yeah, I was a little skeptical coming into this year. I remember the last World Baseball Classic. It was kind of, I don't want to say boring, but it just didn't really live up to the hype. And this year I've become a believer. I love what I've seen. I've watched a few of the games for a second time on YouTube and things like that. And I gotta say, this WBC, if the WBC is like this every 4 years, I'm gonna become a major investor of time in it. It's just really awesome to see.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's just fun to, and it's fun that the USA is doing good, honestly, because sometimes they've disappointed. They've only been to the semifinals once in this. I believe this is the fourth installment, if I'm not mistaken. And this is a pretty cool thing. I mean, if you watched the game last night, that was an electric atmosphere.
If 40 some odd thousand people jammed into a ballpark in March, it's hard not to like that.
Oh yeah.
So, just going back to the Mariners, since that's what we're here to talk about, what have you seen from the Mariners players in particular in the WBC? Is there anything you like or anything that concerns you?
Well, I've liked how well represented the Mariners are, and it was kind of there's two narratives going into this. One was, oh, let's make sure no one gets hurt. We're kind of worried about Felix perhaps getting hurt or Cano or Cruz, and the other one was let's get our Mariners on a national level or national media level and see how they perform at that point. I've been really impressed. I just love watching runs come play. It doesn't matter what team he's playing for. I'm happy he's in a Mariners uniform. I love the Captain C on his uniform for Dominican Republic. I think that's a huge deal. And it's getting these guys live reps, getting ready for a playoff push, and they're getting a playoff environment in March, getting ready for a season which many think could end the drought. So that's a huge deal.
Right. Specifically to Felix Hernandez, you've watched all of his starts, I'm assuming. Is there anything that you've seen or noticed, particularly about him?
Yeah, I didn't get to watch his first start as much. I watched his start against the USA, And, you know, five innings, no runs, zero walks, I think, was the huge one. But sometimes last year, you know, Felix, we all know how he is. He's the alpha dog. And but we also have noticed that when things start to go south, they spiral sometimes. And with him, it's been walks. And seeing zero walks up there is huge. And three strikeouts and just three hits in five innings. He did scare the heck out of me after that first inning play where he fielded a pitch. I think he should just never field a ball, ever. When the trainer came out and looked at him, that gave me a good scare. My blood pressure rose a little to an unhealthy level. But after that, he was lights out. It was pretty amazing to watch. So very encouraging results from Felix from the WBC. I'm kind of deep down happy that it's over for him, just so he can get back into camp and get this momentum towards the Mariners. But yeah, very encouraging results from Felix.
Yeah, I'm not at all disappointed that he's out. I wasn't a big fan of him going in the first place. We talked about that in our second podcast. I was a little worried, but you know, one of the things that jumps out at me, aside from the fastball command, which looks like it's gotten better in every start, his curveball is just filthy right now. It's really good to see, and it's the combination of the curveball and the fact that he can spot his fastball in all four quadrants of the strike zone, something that Jerry Dipoto has mentioned numerous times that he wants to see Felix do. So that's really exciting to see. And we'll just real quick here, what do you think of Drew Smyly?
Oh, it was amazing to watch them two go at it. In fact, Mel Stottlemyre should be sitting back as the pitching coach as a proud papa with 40% of the Mariners rotation on display that night. Drew Smyly was just as good, if not better, than Felix. Eight strikeouts is not very Drew Smyly-like. Drew Smiley's not much of a strikeout guy. I mean, he's up there, but not to the extent of maybe Felix was in his heyday. But 4 2/3, no earned runs, no walks. So both guys had zero walks and zero earned runs. That was impressive. And I'm encouraged because Smyly came in as maybe an unknown, hasn't turned in very many complete seasons. And he's making Dipoto look like a genius, at least with that start. And the question now is, can he sustain that and bring it into the late spring, early summer, and onto a playoff push?
Yeah, Smiley's going to be really important to the Mariners' playoff push, so that was nice to see. Final thing here on the WBC as it relates to the Mariners. You concerned at all about Edwin Diaz? I know he had the save, but it was kind of rocky. Just doesn't look like he quite has the fastball command that he did early last season. Are you concerned at all, or do you just think this is something that he'll figure out?
I'm not as concerned as maybe some. You know, it's early. It's in reality spring training still, and for a kid who went from AA to major leagues, I know that's kind of an exhausting narrative that we've talked about over and over again, I'm sure, but that's no small deal. I think him jumping that high, it's a big learning curve, and sure, he had some great success last year, but this will be his first full season as a major leaguer, and with people getting film on him and maybe some nerves of pitching for his country, I'm not super concerned. He's got the stuff. He's got the electricity. And he's shown that when he does get a little rocky, he does have the mental fortitude to battle back and not back down, which is really encouraging in a closer, because sometimes you see guys like that fold and one earned run to tie the game turns into six and they lose the game. But him, he doesn't back down. So I'm not concerned about it. Just from seeing his attitude and how he's worked and gotten better as a major leaguer, I'm not super concerned.
Yeah, they really... It seems like they have built some pretty good depth in that bullpen as well. So if he does falter, it's nice to have a guy like Steve Cishek, who has closing experience and was actually pretty good last year despite the blown saves. But that'll wrap up the WBC talk. We're just going to touch briefly here on spring training. Have you been watching the games? They've been on FS or they've been on Root Sports for the last week or so. Have you caught any of those games?
I've been able to actually watch one. I watched the last Sunday against the Athletics on TV, and encouraging so far.
Yeah, it's hard to not like the way they're swinging the bats. Like to see the pitchers pitch a little better, but it's spring training in Arizona, so nothing that I'm really that concerned about. Has there been one player or maybe a couple that you've read about during spring training that has you really excited, or you think you're going to like them more than you maybe thought you would have?
I love Mitch Haniger. He's raked. I mean, it's there's no two ways about it. He has come with and has played as advertised, if not better. I think the Mariners will be very happy with that trade with the Diamondbacks. No offense to Taijuan Walker or Ketel Marte, but Haniger is the, you know, he was kind of the understudy of that deal with Gene Segura, but I think in the long run, he might be the chip that they are happy that they got from Arizona.
Yeah, it's a pretty popular opinion. Last week, I kind of, I don't want to say I poo-pooed Mitch Haniger, but I am a little worried that maybe we're putting unrealistic expectations on him. We had a nice discussion about that last week on the podcast. What do you think should be realistic expectations for Mitch Haniger this year?
Well, obviously, coming up in big leagues, there's going to be a learning curve, and he's not going to hit 350 with 40 home runs. It's just not going to happen, and he's not going to hit, what is he hitting now, 400 with 3 or 4? Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. And to be honest, this year, you know, if he can, honestly, what have we gotten from Nori Aoki last year? If he can at least surpass those numbers, which aren't hard to do, he'll be fine. I would love to see 250s plus with maybe 20 home runs, 15, 20 home runs, something along those lines. He'll get his share of strikeouts. He is a rookie. Oops, sorry, my lamp just fell. He'll get his share of strikeouts, and he'll make his share of rookie mistakes, but he'll be just fine, I think. But this year, yeah, let's dial down the expectations a little bit. But 250 with 20 home runs, pretty reasonable.
Yeah, and the expectation is that he'll play really good defense, and he's also a good base runner, maybe not the fastest guy in the world, but he can steal bases for you, and he runs the base as well, something that Seth Smith and Nori Aoki really didn't do last year. So it seems like an upgrade. I'm right there with you. So we're just going to transition here to we're going to talk about some of the things coming up on both of our websites. I should have mentioned that this at the beginning, but Nick actually writes for our sister site, EmeraldCitySwagger.com. He writes mostly about the Mariners over there. I also write for Emerald City Swagger. I started writing about the Seahawks over there. But, Nick, you're working on a top 50 Mariners of all time series. Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about it, and then maybe after we'll get into a few specifics.
Yeah, sure. Just wanted to help pass the time towards opening day, which we're only about 2 weeks away now, which is fantastic, but when I started this countdown, I wanted something maybe for the fans to look forward to as the novelty of spring training starting kind of wears off and we're kind of like, all right, let's get this over with and start the season. I just wanted something for the fans to look forward to. So I love countdowns. I love just breaking down all-time great. I just love that stuff. So I started doing research into the top 50 Mariners of all time. I'm going to be honest. I can't claim to be a lifetime Mariners fan. I grew up in San Diego. I only moved here 2 years ago. So I grew up a Padres fan, so my Mariners knowledge, I've gotten a crash course pretty much over the last 2 years, and I've been to dozens of Mariners games since and done a lot of research and articles and stuff, so I like to think I know my stuff. And what I actually did was for the top 50, I basically took WAR, wins above replacement, mm-hmm. and just did a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet pretty much formula to find the top 50 WAR of all time for the Mariners. And I kind of tweaked it a little bit here and there. I didn't go straight from that list based on, you know, playoff performances and if they were a part of the playoff runs for the Mariners or big moments like hitting for the cycle or no hitter or something like that. So I kind of tweaked it here and there, but I mainly went off the list of top 50 wins above replacement.
Right. I think that's fair. You know, sometimes up here in the Pacific Northwest, we get a little attached to our stars and, we don't want to see that they did anything wrong or maybe they weren't as good as we thought. So I think it's always good to have an outside perspective. In terms of your list, was there maybe one or two Mariners that you were surprised maybe at how high they ranked or you were a little bit, you know, you just weren't sure about them and then you looked at them a little closer and you realized, hey, this guy was pretty good.
Well, yeah, I got one that's current and one that actually is former Mariner. I was actually surprised how high Kyle Seager was. I'm sorry. Kyle Seager was a huge part of these past few seasons, and he has really surprised me in how high he climbed. And I didn't realize he's up there for all-time Mariners home runs. And I think give him 5-6 more good seasons as a Mariner, which he's about listed to have on this contract, he could get up there in all-time home runs. I think he could end up being one of the top five Mariners ever if he continues on this trend. And then just going down the list, one that I actually left off that people might have had a problem with. What is the deal with the infatuation with Willie Bloomquist? Is it just because he's a local guy? Is that why?
You know, we're actually going to talk a little bit about Willie in something that Soto Mojo has been doing. But yeah, a lot of it is he's a local guy. He's a scrapper. You know, he's right across the lake there from Seattle. So, I mean, he's definitely not one of the 50 best Mariners of all times, but he is definitely one of the 50 biggest fan favorites. I don't know. Like, I like him too, but I'm not delusional enough to think that he was some great player. But, yeah, Seattle certainly has a love affair with Willie Bloomquist.
I get it. Local guy. I gotta love the local guys. And I did look up his numbers. It's cool that he was a Mariner for such a long time, and that's pretty cool these days. So I get it. And another thing is just looking at the top 50. Some of these names, now I've been around baseball my whole life. Some of these names, I'm like, huh? I'm scratching my head at some of these. But it's interesting. Omar Vizquel was cracked, and people forget that Omar Vizquel was a darn good Mariner before he became, obviously, a maybe borderline, perhaps, a Hall of Famer for the Indians. But he's up there on the Mariners list, too.
All right, yeah, I would agree. That's people tend to forget that, and it's not hard to see why he, if he does go in the Hall of Fame, and I'm not sure he belongs there, but he's definitely in the debate. If he does get into the Hall of Fame, it'll be as a Cleveland Indian. There's really no denying that. But just two more quick things here before we move on. Just want to, not to give too much away, but you have Alex Rodriguez. I think some Mariners fans would say quite high. I have been on the other side of this issue. I think Alex Rodriguez, you could argue, is maybe the second best Mariner of all time. He's just an incredible player. I know fans here don't really like him. You know, I've wrote about this a few times, but what went into your decision to put A-Rod as high as he was? Was it just stats, or did you consider any kind of the off-the-field issues or anything like that?
He was probably the hardest one, because I totally agree. I think there could be an argument that he is a top five Mariner. And given, because I also did, I gave a little bit of credit towards post-Mariner career, if maybe they became an eventual Hall of Famer or something like that. And he, yeah, it was really hard for me, because I knew him more as a Ranger and a Yankee than I did as a Mariner. And him, and looking at his stats, they are eye-popping. His stats as a Mariner. I mean, I didn't realize how. I knew he was a great Mariner, but I had no idea the numbers he put up as a Mariner. It was incredible. His batting title, I think he hit .358 one year. I mean, just crazy numbers. And he only got better from there, which is, well, we kind of know why. But the controversy did make me keep him out of the top five, because I think the most Mariner fans kind of have like the Holy Trinity of, you know, Griffey, Edgar, Ichiro, maybe Felix and Randy in there. But you know, I don't want to mess with that, but I could be convinced of A-Rod being a top five Mariner easily.
Yeah. And, you mentioned that you were, from San Diego. You haven't really been up here that long. So I'll just throw out the question that, will either make Mariner fans love you or hate you. Is Edgar Martinez a Hall of Famer in your book?
Absolutely.
Good answer.
Hall of Famer, yes. Hall of Fame deserves to have people like Edgar Martinez. People who, there's an award named after him. The designated hitter of the award of the year in the American League is the Edgar Martinez winner. I mean, that should just be enough. Like David Ortiz, Big Poppy should aspire to be like Edgar Martinez, and everyone's thinking David Ortiz is a shoe-in. I think Edgar should get in, obviously, first, and he will. I think he will eventually get in, but yeah, he absolutely deserves to. His numbers, he's a definition of consistency, of loyalty. I think any player who plays 15 plus years with one team and puts up numbers similar to that should be in the Hall of Fame, just for the fact, because in San Diego, we have Tony Gwynn, obviously, right. And Edgar Martinez is the Tony Gwynn of Seattle.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison there. So, yeah, if you guys want to check out the top 50 Mariners of all time list, it's on emeraldcityswagger.com. You can search that with Nick Lee, and it'll pop right up. So we are just going to – it's a really well-done piece. I think you guys should take a look at it. I enjoyed it. And Now we will talk a little bit about what's going on our website, sotomojo.com. As some of you guys may be aware, we announced our favorite Mariner bracket. It's a little bit different than best. We're just kind of searching for who Mariners fans consider to be their fan favorite. We've had Twitter polls up all week long. We're just asking you guys to come on and vote. Nick, have you had a chance to look at this at all, or you've been kind of busy with your top 50 Mariner list?
Oh, I've looked at it. I've actually voted.
There you go.
It's fun. Like I said, I love these kind of things, so I've participated. Yeah.
Was there maybe one player you thought was overseeded or underseeded? You know, with the understanding that seeds weren't exactly as important as just making sure the top 64 Mariners were up there.
Right. No one jumped out at me. I thought it was funny that Dejo Lee made the list, but, you know, me, my last name being Lee and I, you know, being a part of Mariners baseball last year, I don't blame anybody for putting him up there. He was a cult classic. He was a cult favorite for, you know, 3-4 months there. And I was right there. I bought a Lee shirt cause he's got my last name. I had chanted with everybody. I loved him. And so I totally get it. I just think it's funny how played barely one season with us and he gets on the list, but that just shows you how much people loved him.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, I'm not surprised. How should I word? I wasn't a big Dejo Lee fan in spring training. I didn't think he deserved to be on the team. I'm still not a fan of carrying two first basemen, which we'll talk about here briefly. But, you know, he certainly provided some moments last year. And he, like you said, he's kind of a cult classic type of hero here in Seattle. So that's just fine by me. We're in the Sweet 16 right now. You know, there's really, as I check the Twitter polls here, there's really not a ton of close matchups in this round, vote wise. Although one that is creeping a little bit closer is a number two seed, Lou Piniella, former manager of the Mariners, and the number three seed, Kyle Seager. We're at 55% for Lou Piniella, 45 for Seager. So that one's closing. Last time I checked, that was in the 60-30 range. So. You have any thoughts on that, Lou Piniella versus Kyle Seager?
Well, I get why Lou Piniella is so popular. That's a no-brainer. I don't know enough about Mariners history to know that he was a huge part of, you know, the playoff runs and being part of some of the greatest, if not the greatest, obviously the greatest Mariners season of all time. And I think the newness of Kyle Seager still, you know, he's still a fan favorite. So I'm not surprised it's close. I looked at it. Not too long ago, I think it was 55-45 in favor of mm-hmm. Piniella. And it doesn't surprise me that Piniella's slightly eating it. But, you know, Seager's got his Seager believers, so he's hanging around.
Yeah, it feels like if we did this bracket in about 3 or 4 years, Seager would probably be a two seed and he have a good shot at winning the thing. He's just, you know, he's kind of this generation's Edgar Martinez, where he just does things so quietly that he's often gets overlooked by bigger names on his team. So we'll just, as we wrap up this little segment here, do you have a prediction on who the final four will be?
Well, should never bet against Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah, I think that's an obvious one. Yeah.
Yeah. Ken Griffey's on there. And I think, yeah, like you said, the newer generation, I'd say Seager or Felix Hernandez, I think has a real good shot making the final four. If I'm actually naming the brackets right, I'm not quite sure if I have the actual. Let me make sure I have the setup of the bracket right, so I don't say two people that wouldn't be in the final four together. Yeah, okay, here we go. Yeah, Felix and Griffey probably up there, and everyone loves Ichiro. I think with how that one's tough because he's in the same bracket as Edgar, but that's going to be an interesting Elite Eight. Edgar Martinez should probably get the slight edge, but obviously Ichiro is a huge fan favorite given the Japanese population mm-hmm. here in Seattle. So I guess my prediction is Griffey, Edgar, Felix, and then on the other, this is the interesting bracket with Dave Niehaus at number one, and Lou Piniella two, and we got Seager three. That's an interesting bracket. I think Piniella has a shot of being in the upset and maybe getting the final four, maybe perhaps a player, but Seager needs to get past Piniella first. But if Seager somehow gets past Piniella, watch out.
Awesome. Sounds good. So with that, we are going to go ahead and transition here a little bit. Last week, we covered the Mariners outfield. We talked about the depth and what we kind of projected for each player. So this week, just the two of us, so we'll quickly touch on the infield. I guess we'll just start and go around the horn. Let's start actually with the backstops, the catchers. So what do you think of the current Mariners catching situation?
I like it. Zunino is obviously having a good spring. Where have we heard that before?
Right.
He's one of those first team all spring training guys, and somehow doesn't quite translate usually to the regular season. But hey, this year could be different. He's had a different experience these past few years. Zunino is obviously the number one catcher going in. I love the move to bring Carlos Ruiz Chooch in. I love that move because obviously he's a little too old to be catching 140 games, but he's won a World Series. He's been to another. He knows how to get there. He's played on winning teams. He's played on teams that, if not have won the World Series, have gotten close. And so he knows what it takes to be a backstop on a championship team. So putting him behind Zunino was huge. I love it. Even if he barely hits his batting average, I think that's a great addition just mentally and chemistry-wise. So I think the catcher situation right now, if Zunino can cut down the strikeouts, get the walks up like he started to last year, I think the catcher is one of the most solid positions.
Yeah, that's interesting. A lot of people down a little bit on Zunino, but I think a lot of those people are looking at batting average and the fact that he hits 210. It was for a short period last year, but his OPS stretched out over an entire season was number five, I think, in the American League amongst catchers. So, this is kind of a make or break year for Zunino. Quickly on the catchers before we move on. We had a listener question last week, and somebody had asked us, "What would the Mariners do if Mike Zunino essentially is just bust this year? And what's their backup look like? And are there any players that are out there that you could see them maybe bringing in a trade or anything like that?"
That's a good question. Obviously we won't know for sure about Zunino maybe until a few months into this season. If he's a complete bust where he's back to hitting a buck 90 with 100 plus strikeouts, Carlos Ruiz could be a stopgap for a little bit. Obviously we'd prefer not to have him as the everyday catcher. Just thinking back in my database here as a Padres fan as well, Derek Norris recently got traded to the Nationals, who now have Matt Wieters. I believe that they were trying to move Norris, so that could be an option if that comes to it. Norris has got a good bat, a good reputation with the pitching staff, veteran guy, all-star, that will come cheaply if need be. So that hopefully that doesn't happen, of course, God forbid, but I think they like their catching situation, but if not, I think Norris probably would be on the radar.
Yeah, that's a good pull. Let's just slide on down to third base then. You feel pretty good about the floor of Mariner third baseman Kyle Seager, but do you think that he could possibly take another step? It seems like every year we kind of sit around and say, well, we've seen the best Kyle Seager can possibly be, and every year he kind of takes another step forward. Do you think that that could happen again this season? And if you do, what would that look like?
Yeah, I actually mentioned this in my article because he made my 10 through 6 list at number 8. We really don't know if we've seen the best of Kyle Seager yet. He had a 30 home run, 99 RBI season. Strikeouts went down, average went up again. He's consistently gotten better every single year. I don't see a reason why not to expect something similar until he starts plateauing or trending downward. I think this year, maybe hover around 30 home runs and hovering around 275. That would be, if he can repeat last year, that's a sign of improvement in my book. Because repeating something like 30 home runs, 99 RBI, that's a big deal. And especially with a lineup that the Mariners have that drives in so many runs, that with the guys ahead of him like Cano and Cruz, if he can get almost triple digit RBI out of that's pretty impressive. So I think similar numbers to last year, and he's sitting real pretty.
Yeah, it's tough to disagree. You just feel so good about Seager. He's going to be there every day. He's going to play solid defense. And yeah, like you said, you can pretty much pencil him in. He has a really high floor. So Mariners fans should feel really good about third base. We'll slide over to shortstop. The biggest acquisition of the offseason, at least in name, Gene Segura, who led the National League in hits last year. He's coming over to play shortstop. What do you think are realistic expectations for him?
Well, I've been saying this since we got him. I think expecting 20 home runs and a National League or league leading in hits again is probably unrealistic. And we've seen how big name free agents perform when they come to Seattle sometimes, Nelson Cruz being the exception. You know, we've seen guys like Adrian Beltre, Sean Figgins. I know I'm bringing up some hard names here for some Mariner fans. You know, Richie Sexton, those guys who came in as free agents who maybe didn't quite live up to the major expectations. Robinson Cano, another one that is the exception as well. But I think something along the lines of 12 to 15 home runs, 280 average would be fantastic. I mean, looking at the numbers from Ketel Marte last year, those numbers would greatly improve. Offensively, at least, and where defensively, he's been impressive. Although he did play mostly second base last year, he is a shortstop. He has played shortstop, and I think having him in that lineup replacing Marte, that is a huge upgrade.
Yeah, you know, I think by Fangraphs WAR metrics last year, Ketel Marte was a negative half win player. You know, and Segura was a 5 win player. I think that's too much to expect of anybody. But if he can just be a 2.5 win player, which he was his rookie year, that's a 3 win improvement at least on paper. And defensively, you know, I'm interested. This is something I've kind of been thinking about. It sounds like the concern with Segura defensively is that his range isn't quite what Marte is, but he's more likely to make, you know, the routine play. Do you think that having Kyle Seager to his right and Robinson Cano on his left, plus the shifting that the Mariners do a lot of, do you think that can really negate the negative defensive impacts of Gene Segura's range?
Oh yeah, and not just with the glove, but with the veteran presence of the two sandwiching him, that's huge, and that cannot be overstated. I think, you know, when he was with the Diamondbacks, he was kind of one of the leaders. Here, he kind of just can fit a mold and do his thing, and not have to worry about, you know, pulling guys along with him. He's got two infielders to his left and right who have been there, done that, been all stars. So he can just do his thing. He doesn't have too much to worry about. So I think, yeah, with Cano and Seager, I'm not quite sure how many gold gloves they have combined, but he'll be all right. I think the Mariners, yeah, with the shifts, will more than compensate for any lacking that he has with the glove, which is not much.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. So now we'll slide on over to the man who will hopefully be turning many double plays with Gene Segura this year. What else do you have to say about Robinson Cano besides, man, he's awesome?
He is awesome, that's for sure. No, I hesitate to expect the same kind of numbers he did last year. I mean, last year was fantastic. He had his best year, Mariner or Yankee, last year. And to expect something similar may not be realistic. I'm okay with 30 plus home runs still. Maybe not pushing 40, but 30 plus. And yeah, right around 100 RBI, right around 280, 290 average, like he was his first couple years as a Mariner, or first year as a Mariner. And with his glove, he's awesome. He's the real deal. He's what we paid for, and the Mariners are getting pretty much every dollar of what they paid for with him. It's a lot of dollars, but it's paid dividends so far. And if it ends in a playoff appearance for the Mariners, it'll be a lot because Robinson Cano is there in the lineup every day.
Yeah, you know, there's really not much to add. You just expect Robbie to be Robbie, and you're thankful that he's on your team. So probably the biggest question in the infield is the first base. What's going to happen there? The Mariners brought in Danny Valencia around what was it, about a week before Thanksgiving, and of course last season in July they acquired Daniel Vogelback for Mike Montgomery. So those two have kind of been getting a lot of playing time with you know, Cano and Segura at the WBC and Cruz. So what are you just expecting from that whole thing? Let's just start with Danny Valencia. There's a lot of layers to this, but just start with what you think of Danny Valencia as a player.
Well, he has the body of work. He has the track record, obviously, of being a solid player. To be honest, I've been a little disappointed this year with him so far. I mean, spring training, I try not to read too much into spring training wins and losses, but I do read into some statistics and some splits, especially on veteran players who are trying to get a starting job. And Valencia is one of those players that is trying to earn a starting job, and so his stats do matter in spring training, and he's been pretty underwhelming. He's hitting just, I believe, .195, and I actually was looking up him against left-handed hitters, and right now he's actually got against lefties than Vogelbach does, obviously with more at-bats, but worse numbers. So I'm a little disappointed, honestly, but he's got a track record, so I'd kind of hang my hat on that for a little bit. I expect him, obviously, to make the team and contribute, but right now I'd like to see a little bit more.
And your thoughts on Daniel Vogelbach?
I think he's made a lot of strides in perhaps becoming the everyday first baseman. I'm with you. I don't like platoon players. I've always been, you got eight guys in your lineup, you pencil them in every day. That's the consistency. That's how teams win. And with that, that's Vogelbach. I think Vogelbach is the first baseman of the future. And if he can get over the hump of hitting against left-handed pitchers, he will be the everyday first baseman. I don't see a reason why not. In fact, I was looking at numbers. His only home run this spring is against a left-handed pitcher, and he does have better numbers right now, like I mentioned, against lefties than even Valencia does. And he's got a better fielding percentage in the spring. So it seems like he's made a lot of strides, and I can just tell he's worked hard over the winter to become perhaps the everyday first baseman for the Mariners.
Yeah, he certainly looks more athletic than what he was last year. You know, I've watched quite a few of his plate appearances in the spring. It looks like he just knows how to hit. He looks hitterish up there. He works counts. He takes the ball the other way. You know, he might not be your typical first baseman and the idea that he's going to hit 25, 30 home runs, but it just seems like this is a guy at Safeco Field who's just going to pepper the gaps with line drive after line drive. You know, collect a bunch of doubles, have a nice average, a really good on-base percentage, and work counts. You know, the question is defense. Can he ever transition? I mean, it's tough to know after just a few spring training games, but is there anything that you've noticed defensively with Daniel Vogelbach?
Well, to be honest, I haven't actually gotten to watch a ton. I've watched right. that one televised game, and I've watched highlights here and there. And no red flags right now. I know this is ticky-tack, but Valencia has an error at first base. Vogelbach does not this year. So that's if you want to get that petty about it. So far, Vogelbach has outperformed Valencia. I don't know about defensive runs saved or the range factor. That I haven't looked into that yet. But right now, if I'm Scott Servais and I see Vogelbach, the strides that he's made from last year to this year, I'm impressed. And I think that this could be his position to lose. I don't believe in a platoon. I think Valencia would be a great, like, ninth, quote-unquote, fielder, like a sixth man in basketball, where you pencil him in here and there and to be a veteran guy to get his bat in the lineup. But I honestly believe Vogelbach should be the everyday guy and until he gives you a reason not to, because he has worked hard in it, and he should be rewarded.
I agree with you, first of all, but I think the question is that we know that Danny Valencia is going to make this ball club. We also know that he is going to hit against left-handed pitching. So I guess my question is if the Mariners think Danny Valencia is going to be their everyday first baseman, does it make sense for the team to have Daniel Vogelbach up and maybe get 2-3 games a week? Or would you rather see him sent down to Tacoma where he can get regular at-bats and continue to work on his defense?
That's a really good question. I think at this point in his development, it probably would benefit him more to be in Tacoma. If he was more of an Adam Lind, where he's been there, done that, he's been in the major leagues, no. But since he's young, he's kind of the Mariners' Kyle Schwarber, I kind of like to call him, where they don't really know quite what to do with Schwarber. That's kind of the same thing here with Vogelbach, if it doesn't quite work out this year for first base. I believe, yes, it would be beneficial for both parties if he went down to Tacoma if it didn't work out. And obviously Valencia will hit, and it'll come. I'm not super concerned about the numbers yet, but I think Vogelbach going to Tacoma, if things aren't looking good early, would be beneficial.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. But finally, we'll just go ahead and wrap this up with the utility player battle. Right now, it looks like a two-man battle between Sean O'Malley and Taylor Motter. Mike Freeman is also in there, but not being on the 40-man roster, it certainly hinders his likelihood of making the team. So, they've gotten a lot of playing time recently. What do you think about Motter and O'Malley, and who do you think it should be?
Well, I love Motter's hair flip, first of all. I gotta throw that in there. That went mini viral after that stolen base against the Cubs. His blonde locks flowing in the wind. That was pretty great. I have been impressed by him too. Besides his hair status, I do believe it'll be Sean O'Malley. Just for the fact that he has a track record a little bit longer than Motter's, and he was here last year and came up in some big moments. I was there on Saturday night, Griffey night, when he hit that big home run to take the lead against the Angels. I was there. The place was rocking, and so he's been a Mariner, and I think that definitely gives him a huge edge. And I don't think he's given them a reason to not trust him this spring. I guess I could be wrong, but I haven't seen it. He's never going to be a 280, 15 home run kind of hitter, but guy you can plug in at second, at short, at third, and kind of just put him in everywhere. I love players like that, and he fits the mold. And every team, every winner needs someone similar, a high performing Sean O'Malley. So I think if his bat is where it kind of was when he was good last year, he will be on the roster and contribute greatly.
I was also at the Los Angeles Angels game, and that easily is one of my probably my top five baseball moments. Ken Griffey Jr. night, and the utility guy from Richland, Washington, is getting his name chanted by 45,000 at Safeco Field. That was so cool to see. I'm there with you. I think Motter probably brings more pop with the bat. They're both really good base runners. That's good to see. Defensively, though, I think the slight edge has to go to O'Malley. Just because if you are going to carry two first basemen, O'Malley has played in the outfield before. And if you're going to carry two first basemen, it doesn't seem likely that you're also going to carry like Heredia or Gamel. So having the outfield experience really helps. So I would tend to agree with you on that. So just to wrap this up, overall feelings about the infield, do you like what they've done? Do you see any holes that they might need to fill eventually?
Honestly, this if the first and honestly the platoon at first base could work out perfectly, where one bats against right, one bats against left, and that'd be great. And if that works out, this could be one of the better infields in the American League, if not the major leagues. I think you got Seager, Segura, and Cano, who've all been all stars. Zunino has the bat to be an all star, at least the pop. If his average can go up with his pop and his defense, he could be an all star. So this really could turn into one of the better infields in baseball if a couple things break their way, especially at first base.
I have to agree with that. So now we're just going to wrap up our show with the segment we like to call the People's Voice. And unfortunately, the people did not send us very good questions this week. So I'm going to throw a few audibles at you. These are questions that I have been asked. Just quick story here. I coach Little League 11, 12-year-olds, and I also coach school ball 13, 14-year-olds. And so, yeah, I get asked some weird questions sometimes, and I like to write them down. I have this nice little book, and I don't know if probably nothing's ever going to come of it, but I have a book here of weird questions, and so I'm just going to go through three or four, and we'll see what
Sounds
happens.
great.
You ready for
Oh,
this?
yeah. Fire away.
All right. Question one, is it pronounced GIF or JIF?
I think it's GIF. You don't give someone a Christmas gift, you give them a Christmas gift. So I think it's GIF.
I actually agree with you on that one. Question number two, is a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
Ooh, I have to disagree with you on that one. It's a piece of meat. It's a piece of meat between bread. I
I
mean,
get
that's, yeah.
it. It's its own category. Don't get me wrong. I love hot dogs,
Yeah,
but.
its own category. Okay, that's fair. Big debate that happens over here at Soto Mojo. Pineapple as a pizza topping, yes or no?
Yes, but not my first choice. I'm not a one of those. It's pineapple or nothing. My wife is a huge pineapple and even cashew on pizza person. I don't quite get that. I was raised by
Ooh.
a Philly East Coast dad where if it didn't have meat on it wasn't right. So not my first choice, but I'm open to it.
Yeah, I've taken the apparently rather unpopular stance that pineapple ruins pizza, so I'm kind of on an island there, but I would agree. I think that's a very diplomatic answer of you, so nicely done. Favorite baseball player?
Current or all time?
All time.
I gotta say Tony Gwynn, Mr. San Diego. Yeah. Played all of his career there. Did a lot for the community growing up. I imitated his stance. I wore his number in high school. Tony Gwynn, by far.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that. You earlier referred to Edgar Martinez as Seattle's Tony Gwynn, and I also tried to emulate Edgar's batting stance, and I wore his number all the way through high school. So it's funny that you should mention that. But let's see here. Let me find an appropriate one, I should say. Let's see. What is your craziest theory regarding television or movies?
Like a fan theory?
Yeah, I think that's what they're asking.
That's a really good one. I need to sit down and think about this. I'm a huge Star Wars guy. I love Star Wars.
All right, let's start with here then. Who's Rey's father?
Ooh. I am not opposed to the idea of Obi-Wan Kenobi, to be honest.
Yeah.
I could see a scenario where she is his daughter. I mean, she had to get her Jedi senses from somewhere, so it doesn't just come out of nowhere. So,
yeah, I think that's interesting. I think the easy answer is probably Luke, but that just seems too easy. I'm looking forward to the eighth installment coming out. Speaking of that, favorite movie of all time is?
Ooh, that's another tough one. Again, I love Star Wars. I'd have to say Star Wars. I can't think of something that would. I'm a sports movie guy. Remember the Titans, Rudy, those kind of things. Field of Dreams, but Star Wars is a little bit more just because I grew up with it as a kid. I don't know if I could pick a specific Star Wars movie. Maybe Return of the Jedi. I'd say if I had to pick absolutely one Star Wars movie, probably be Return of the Jedi.
That's a solid choice. I'm right there with you. I love the 70s. Like trilogies. I love The Godfather, and I'm a big fan of Star Wars. Also a huge fan of the Rocky franchise, except for Rocky V. Other than that, favorite flavor of ice cream?
Cookie dough. I can't argue with chunks of cookie dough in an ice cream. Just goodness.
That is the right answer. And last one here. Let's see. What do we have? All right. Let's go with this one. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
That's a good one. I would either love to fly, or if you're into X-Men, you ever seen Nightcrawler?
Yeah.
Teleport anywhere? Yeah. That'd be pretty awesome. So I guess it'd be a more efficient way of flying. So I guess let's do Nightcrawler, X-Men. Be able to
there
teleport.
You go. Very nice. I think I would. That is a tough one. I think the answer I actually gave this 11-year-old is I would want to be like Wolverine and have that healing factor. But it's hard to super strength, super speed. It's all good. There's not really a bad superpower. So just quick audible here. It sounds like you're a fan of the superhero franchises and stuff like that. Do you have a favorite superhero movie or a favorite superhero in general?
Ooh. I've always been a fan of the superheroes that aren't super, if you follow, like Batman and Iron Man, guys who aren't really like special, like special powers, but are cool because they're smart and rich. Batman's probably my favorite, because he's just a regular guy. He just happens to be rich and well-trained. So, I just like the feeling of, he's not super far off from a normal human being. He's not like Superman. I've never really understood Superman. He's too invincible, I guess. So I like the normal guys that just have cool stuff like Iron Man and Batman.
Yeah, you and I are going to have to hang out because we're agreeing on a lot of these answers. I love Batman. I love Iron Man. I think I probably like Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark more than I actually like the superhero Iron Man. But I'm also a big fan of Captain America. So, that's just where I'm at. So that's going to wrap up our Voice of the People. So if any of my 10-year-old Little Leaguers are listening to this, there you go, guys. Keep on sending me questions, and maybe you'll get on this podcast. So as we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts?
Oh, go Mariners. I hope they make a playoff push. I'm thinking they have a good shot at the AL West this year, and if everyone stays healthy, this should be a heck of a summer.
Yep, I would agree with that. So with that said, guys, make sure you check out Nick's article, The 50 Best Mariners of All Time at EmeraldSquare.com. You follow him on Twitter, at NickLee51. Is that still accurate?
That is correct, yes.
So make sure you check that out. Also, if you guys haven't yet, please go on to SotoMojo.com or head to Twitter, at SotoMojo, on our Sweet 16 bracket. By the time you hear this, it'll probably be the Elite Eight bracket. But go vote anyways. You know, make sure you check out all of our stuff on both sites. They both put out really good content. And Nick, thanks for joining us. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Will do. Absolutely. This was a blast. I'd love to do it again.
Awesome. So from me here at Soto Mojo and Nick over at Emerald City Swagger, you know, have fun this week, guys. Go Mariners and go Team USA. Bye, guys.